Still in a company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Today, the grand opening of DraftKings Sports and Social at Nashville Live on 2nd Avenue. We're hanging out in the DraftKings Lounge right now. This place, you can look right there. You see Nissan Stadium, got TVs everywhere. They've got a 40-foot TV out there for everybody to watch the big games. This is the spot downtown to watch the games. And they got a lot going on tonight. Thursday night football. The first 50 people in the door will receive a gift from DraftKings. And then Saturday, they got the ultimate tailgate party. And Sunday, the official Titans watch party. The Titans game day hangout is right here. And you can register to win a signed Derrick Henry jersey and tickets to an upcoming game. So this week we'll get to see Anthony Richardson. And boy, did we spend a lot of time talking about Anthony Richardson before the draft. And then we'll get to see C.J. Stroud later in the year. And boy, did we spend a lot of time talking about C.J. Stroud. And those guys are actually doing their thing. I mean, I watched the Texans versus Colts game. Now, Richardson didn't play all that long because he got concussed and got knocked out. But Stroud, I mean, throwing the ball to Nico Collins and to Tank Dell and Robert Woods, he looked comfortable and he looked like an NFL quarterback. And then Richardson, you know, he makes some throws in the NFL where I'm like, there's just nobody else on the planet that can do what you do. And then he's got some Superman-like runs. And then he's got some rookie 21-year-old kind of mistakes. And then there's the other guy that we spent all that time talking about. We also talked about Hendon Hooker, but that's a different discussion. Will Levis. And every week, while we're hosting the award-winning pregame show at 10:30, before we bring TD on, we run through the inactives, and they always change. Some weeks it's Peter Skoronski. Other weeks it's this defensive player or that linebacker or that offensive lineman or, you know, Jalen Duncan or this one or that. And it always ends with quarterback Will Levis. And I think there is a sentiment, because I see it in your texts and I hear it, that is, up, Titans screwed up again. The Texans got the quarterback that we all know you wanted. Mainly because you couldn't shut your mouth and you told everybody that you wanted C.J. Stroud. And so the Texans got the quarterback you wanted. The Colts got the quarterback I wanted. And nobody else wanted Will Levis. That's why he didn't go in the first round. You move up in the second round, you take him. Everybody then thinks, okay, he's the heir apparent to Tannehill. And yes, it's good value, but a quarterback's quarterback. Doesn't matter if you took him first overall or if you took him with the last pick in the draft. If he's your quarterback, he's your quarterback. And so a lot of people are looking at Will Levis and the fact that he has not been active, that Malik Willis is the backup of this team when Malik Willis was an afterthought when the Titans drafted Will Levis. And they think that that foreshadows that Will Levis will be a failure. And I think that that is crazy talk. Now, that doesn't mean that Will Levis is going to make it, because I don't know. But for all of you out there that are just hell-bent and convinced that Will Levis is not going to make it, you also don't know. There's no way to know where he is in terms of the progress of what he was at Kentucky, taking the raw ability that we saw in training camp. He had some throws, especially in the red zone, that were just beautiful. He played 30 snaps in one preseason game. That's all you've seen of Will Levis. You have no idea how good he is getting or how good he's not getting. You have no idea how Tim Kelly or Charles London, or Mike Vrabel, or Rand Carthon feel about Will Levis when they work with Will Levis every day. They see the work habits. They see in practice that they probably told Will Levis last week, hey, dude, you're Joe Burrow. We need you to run this play. How quickly did Will Levis get it figured out? You don't know. Was Will Levis an accurate passer on the scout team going up against the Titans' first defense, throwing the ball to Colton Dowell, who was T. Higgins? You don't know. I don't know either. Now, I believe that it ultimately, I believe in sitting quarterbacks, even though I know that for the most part, everybody wants the quarterback to play right away, and everybody says, got to play right away, got to play right away, got to play right away. The best quarterback in the NFL right now, Patrick Mahomes, didn't play right away. He didn't play right away. Aaron Rodgers didn't play right away. He sat for 3 years before he played. Tom Brady didn't play as a rookie. Brock Purdy didn't play until the, what, 9th, 10th game last year? And Brock Purdy's looking great. Sam Howell didn't play. He seems to be doing okay. So when you look at Will Levis and you say, wow, look at C.J. Stroud. He's doing his thing. Look at Anthony Richardson. He's doing his thing. And our guy that I didn't want them to draft from the beginning, because as Paul Kaharsky correctly points out, he's not the UT guy, which I think is how a lot of you guys feel. You don't know how he's doing. I don't know how he's doing. TD today asked Charles London all about how he was doing. Asked him, hey, how's he doing in the meeting rooms? How's he doing on the practice field? How's he coming along? How's he... And Charles London was just, you know, coach talk. He's doing well. Malik's doing well. He's doing well. He's doing well in the meeting rooms. Malik's doing well in the meeting rooms. He's asking good questions. Malik's asking good, you know, like, that's just kind of, they're not going to tell you. Like, that's, this is just how it works. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know how Will Levis is doing. I don't know if Mike Vrabel is sitting there thinking, hey, we got the dude. And next year, we're going to unleash him on the league. I don't even know if Andy Reid felt that way on October 5th of 2017 that, hey, this guy we're going to unleash on the league next year is going to win MVP and we're going to host the AFC Championship game every single year after that. So don't worry about Will Levis. Dan Marino started 9 games as a rookie. I think Dan Marino turned out to be pretty good. Well, Jared, he didn't do enough to be the backup behind Malik Willis. He's inactive on game day. He's... You wonder that maybe there's a chance the Titans figured, hey, what we did last year was unfair to Malik, and we're not going to make the same mistake twice. Maybe the Titans look at Malik Willis as their backup quarterback for the long haul. But there's no reason to be down on Will Levis right now. There's no tangible reason. Plus, your quarterback's playing pretty well. So I understand about being jealous of other teams' quarterbacks. C.J. Stroud's doing his thing, and Anthony Richardson is doing his thing. And you know I love Anthony Richardson, and you know Vrabel loves C.J. Stroud. But that doesn't mean that Will Levis won't be their guy. Now, I'm not saying Will Levis will be their guy. I told you when he came out, I liked him. I didn't love him. I loved Richardson. They obviously liked him and didn't love him because they drafted a guard with the 11th overall pick. If you love a quarterback, you draft him. But he's not a bust. He's not a failure. He's not none of that yet. It's okay. 615-737-1025. Remember, Eli Manning played some as a rookie. Ben Roethlisberger played as a rookie. Phillip Rivers didn't play for 2 years. I'd say Phillip Rivers is pretty good. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your phones. 615-737-1025. Plus Trevor later this hour here on Stillman & Company, live from the grand opening of the DraftKings Sports and Social, downtown 2nd Avenue at Nashville Live, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
They can straddle a fence and conceivably win the division and have gotten their quarterback of the future and their running back of the future. Now, a lot of people don't like the quarterback of the future because he's not the UT guy. And you're going to have to get over that. He's not the quarterback you wanted from UT, and he happens to be from a school you don't like that's a rival of UT. You got to get over that.
I love that cut because it's so true. It's so true. You got to get, like, okay, so he didn't go to UT. It's okay with Levis. The injury report is out, by the way. The Colts are seriously injured. You know, like, so the Colts, my buddy Sweeney does radio in Indianapolis, and he and I have been texting this week. In fact, I'm going on the morning show in Indy tomorrow. And he was, hold on, what was that? Oh, so, anywho, so he does radio in Indianapolis, and he was like, oh, yeah, the Colts are so hurt. They held a walkthrough yesterday instead of practice because of how hurt they were, and they got all these guys in concussion protocol. So for the Colts, Shaq Leonard did not practice with a groin. Kwity Paye did not practice with a concussion. Bernard Raymond did not practice with a concussion. But Ryan Kelly and Jonathan Taylor were full participants. Kelly with a concussion, he missed last week, and Taylor with an ankle. Now, for the Titans, DeAndre was resting today. He was a limited participant. Derrick Henry was resting today. He did not practice. Burks, Gifford, Tiertart did not practice with injuries, and then everybody else was fine. Do I need to be worried about Tiertart? TD gave me a little bit. So, you know, that will – he said he thinks he'd play, which with Jonathan Taylor in there is probably a good thing. But, again, Tiertart – I'm not – even if Tart's out, I still think they'll be fine stopping the run. Let's go to your phones, as we always do. Elliot says, our phone lines, by the way, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Elliot says, I truly believe that the Titans broke Malik Willis last year by throwing him out there when he was not ready. So the Titans have decided to give Will Levis a true redshirt year. And I, Jared, also wanted Anthony Richardson for the Titans as well. I agree. I don't think the Titans have decided they're giving Will Levis a true redshirt year. I'm not convinced of that. And the Titans will never tell you that, even if that is the intention, because the Titans don't want Will Levis to mentally check out. And if he knows, like, yeah, I'm never going to play, then he might do that. But I think also that the Titans would never say publicly that they want a redshirt year for Will Levis, because what happens, knock on wood, if something happens to Tannehill and Willis, and now you're stuck with Levis in a game, you know, Brock Purdy style. And then as a coach, it's like, well, 3 weeks ago, you said you didn't even want that guy to play. So even if their plan was to give Levis a redshirt year, Vrabel would never admit to it. You know, Vrabel's like, I believe in everybody that's on this team all the time. It's like, do you really believe in Daniel Munyer? Probably not. Texture says, with Tannehill in there, Will Levis can learn, and in training camp, Levis was money in the red zone. That is true, and I saw that on an almost daily basis. And I do like the idea of quarterbacks sitting. Maybe I'm old-fashioned in that regard. Maybe it's my conservative quarterback values that have me wanting quarterbacks to sit. But, I mean, I'm fine with Stroud and Bryce Young playing. I would have sat Anthony Richardson this season if I were the Colts. Just because, again, I like to let quarterbacks sit. I don't want them to get their brains kicked in. I don't want them to get down on themselves. I don't want them to throw a bunch of interceptions. But if you played at a big D1 school and you did it for a while, like, then I could, okay, fine. Go ahead, put them out there. Richardson played basically 1 year at Florida. So I would have put him on the bench, but I'm fine with quarterbacks sitting. I'm fine with quarterback sitting. Texter said, don't forget with C.J. Stroud that the Texans are playing a last-place schedule. Say this about the Texans. And this is the one thing everybody's got to remember about the Texans. This Nico Collins for the Texans is a bad dude. And the Texans right now, and now, you know, now that there's going to be more tape out there, more defensive coordinators will start to kind of figure it out one way or another. But Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator, has made a concerted effort to make sure that the ball ends up in the hands of Nico Collins and Damian Pierce, the running back. And he is doing a great job protecting C.J. Stroud. But I'm also not jumping up and down about the Texans yet. I mean, I think that all four teams in the division have their own issues, and all four teams in the division have shown something positive, albeit Jacksonville probably has shown the least. Gary says the Titans will get a year to look at other division quarterbacks, so they won't have any tape on Will Levis, so let it rock next year. I think that's overrated. Like the, oh, we're going to surprise them? That works for a game. That doesn't work for a season. Let's say Will Levis is the starting quarterback next year. By week five, they're going to know what you want to do. So I think that's probably a little over the top. One texter says, why play Levis when you have Tannehill? Why play Levis? Do you listen to the people that text the morning show that want to tank for Caleb Williams and want to see, you know, every time the Titans lose again, let's see how Malik does. And by the way, I think I've done this twice now, Ian. I think I did this on Monday when we were talking about, you know, where are the Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry haters today after the performance they had on Sunday against the Bengals?
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday, I said, I'm done litigating the Ryan Tannehill, you know, should he be the quarterback of this team? I'm done with that. I said it. Like, we're not talking about that. And I haven't gotten a lot of pushback on that. But the second they lose a game, which might be Sunday, but the second they lose a game, it'll be, what's the point of having Tannehill when we can't win a Super Bowl with him anyways, Jared? And it's like, yo, chill out. Like, it'll be okay. Like, Tannehill's doing a good job. And I think Tannehill is doing a good job. 615-737-1025. Trevor will join us coming up next. What did Trevor think? I really want to get Trevor's thoughts on the offensive line after that horrible game they had against the Browns and that much better game they had against the Bengals. We'll do that with Trev. We'll do it next. We're live at the DraftKings Sports and Social downtown for their grand opening today. Come on out, check it out. It's the ultimate sports experience right here in downtown Nashville, right on 2nd Avenue, facing Nissan Stadium. Come on out. It is the DraftKings Sports and Social. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Yeah, I think our blocking as a whole, you know, took a step forward. You know, you look at what the tight ends did, what the offensive line did, had receivers finishing down the field. It was more of the way we want to play as far as physical finish, you know, just being a team that's going to play until the whistle and finishing those blocks down the field, trying to keep the ball carrier clean all the way down the field. You know, you look at this team, they were playing a team that's going to try to hunt the ball. You see them punching at the ball, raking at the ball. You know, so it's going to be crucial that we can keep our guys off of the ball carrier and finish those blocks.
There you go. That was Tannehill talking about the Titans offensive line. A much better performance last week against the Bengals. It's time to bring in Trevor Maddich, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters, in Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. So, Trev, let's get right into it. Your assessment, we talked about how bad the offensive line was against the Cleveland Browns. What did you think of the offensive line against the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday?
Hallelujah. What an improvement. I think part of it, Jared, was that the offensive line played better. You can see him bear down and just not get tossed around as much. But also a hallelujah for Tim Kelly, offensive coordinator, helping him out. I mean, the difference in play calling and scheming from the first several games to this one was almost like preseason, where you just hang people out to see what they can do, and regular season when you game plan to cover weaknesses and help create advantages, right? And that's what it looked like. I mean, just for one thing, here's one example. On Derrick Henry's 29-yard touchdown run, what they did was, instead of asking left tackle Andre Dillard to step out and block Trey Hendrickson on the left edge, who's kind of out a little bit wide, and then asking the left guard to step out and kind of block the defensive tackle in the B gap, kind of just outside his shoulder, what they did was they lined up tight end Josh Wiley as a fullback. They had Wiley go out and block Hendrickson. Now, Wiley kind of has an advantage in that matchup because Hendrickson has contain. He can't just fall back inside too soon because he has to make sure that Henry doesn't bounce outside. So it was a great block by Wiley to go out there and post him up. on the edge. That allowed Dillard, instead of having to step out and try to block Henderson in space, he stepped in to help Dylan Radins block the defensive tackle and then move up to pick off the linebacker. And they didn't do a great job of that, but they did pretty good. But it gives you an advantage at the offensive line where you're both firing out without having to step out into space, and you get a double team to start the block instead of both of those guys at a disadvantage because the defense lines up with an advantageous defensive leverage to the outside where they wanted to run. And so it was a 29-yard touchdown once Henry broke through that gap, and it was a big gap. He stiff-armed one guy, he ran through some tackles, and he scores a touchdown. Well, where in the world was that kind of creativity in the running game? There were other creative things they did in the running game and the pass game. And instead of listing them all now, well, maybe we'll get to some of them as we talk here. But it was fantastic to see the creativity in the game planning and the play calling to help these guys out, and they responded.
So, Trevor, you think, you know, Vrabel after the game was, oh, it's always about the players. Oh, when we win, it's always all the credit to the players. But you think that what we saw on Sunday was more of a product of Tim Kelly using the chess pieces correctly than it was, say, the offensive line improving?
Yes. I think both happened, but the quantum leap was with creativity with play calling. You know, here's another example. This isn't just offensive line, but they ran a play action pass, and the fake run was to the right. Tight end was on Hendrickson on the left. Hendrickson beat him quickly. But now the center, Aaron Brewer, fired off to the right on the play action pass. But instead of staying there, nobody was in his gap, so he didn't have to block anybody. He was the free offensive lineman. So instead of staying in the middle, he immediately doubled back to pick up Hendrickson, who had beat the tight end coming around the left edge, and block him so that Tannehill could get the ball off. Now, that's just, what a great idea. Where's the weak spot there? The weak spot is the great pass rusher against the tight ends who have proven they can't block a great pass rusher. There's going to be a free offensive lineman on that. So whoever that is, how about you just double back instead of standing there and watching the play, right? Mm-hmm. So that's just another one of those. Another thing that helped them, by the way, was Tannehill. I saw a lot of hard counts in this game. So that he, you know, instead of just going, you know, blue 27, said hut, and the defenders are able to kind of get a rhythm of when the snap would be. They do the hard count, so it would be blue 27, set, hut. And on that first one, the defense tends to jump, right? Well, now they have to wait and not get such a good jump off the snap because the cadence has been changing up from just a consistent cadence that's rhythmic to a hard count cadence that you never know where the snap's going to be. That helped them in pass protection as well.
Trevor, you brought up Tannehill. What did you think of Tannehill and the wide receivers against the Bengals?
I thought the wide receivers were fine. You know, I thought the wide receivers were fine. I thought the tight ends were better. But I thought the wide receivers were okay. You know, they didn't really jump out. To me, this was a play-action game. And the wide receivers did well when they were asked to. I don't think they were bad necessarily. I'm trying to think of bad plays. What really stands out to me there is that, you know, in weeks past, they just expected the offensive line to block that guy, block him on pass protection. This time, they had much more chipping, much more play action, much more max protection. So now you're not getting extra guys out into the pass pattern, but you are allowing more time for the guys that are out in the pass pattern to kind of get open. And so, you know, the thing that stands out most about the wide receivers was DeAndre Hopkins on a play where Tajay Spears started running to the left. And then he cut back to the right. And Hopkins went over and shielded off two defenders, not one, but two. He didn't hit either one of them, but he kind of got his body in their way. You know, and that kind of thing doesn't show up in the box score, but that kind of thing really helps. But the tight ends, man, the tight ends, both catching the ball and chipping and blocking, I thought they had a big step up as well.
Trevor, you've been watching Joe Burrow for a long time. Can we take anything away from the Titans defense on Sunday, given the state of Joe Burrow's calf?
Joe Burrow right now is one of the worst in the league in total QBR, quarterback rating. And so I think the Titans did what they had to do, which was anticipate short passes and runs. Anticipate that Burrow would not scramble much, that he would not stand in the pocket to allow deeper pass patterns to develop. and they attacked the line of scrimmage. They attacked the short passing game, and they did what they had to do. You know, I wouldn't say that the Titans defense was awesome and fantastic, because look what they did to Burrow. You know, Burrow's been struggling all year long, but again, they beat the team that was in front of them. You know, they beat the team that they had to beat in the way that they had to beat them.
Nicholas Petit-Ferrer makes his return. Trevor Maddich is with us. Nicholas Petit-Ferrer makes his return to the active roster. It doesn't sound like he'll be starting on Sunday. Peter Skoronski is expected perhaps to make his return, though I think it's going to be still a game-time decision. Would you stick Skoronski back in there, and would you stick Petit-Ferrer back in there, and how would you go about doing that?
I would absolutely stick Skoronski in there. And if he ends up being still a little too banged up to go do the whole thing, well, then you can swap him back out. But I'd put him in at left guard where he's been practicing and let him hold down that position. Petit-Ferrer is an interesting thing, because Andre Dillard has not gotten better at pass protection in terms of the way he does it. He gives up the corner all the time. His pass set is too vertical. He doesn't get out to cut off the corner. So it's easy for a pass rusher to get to the edge. And then when they meet at the edge, he's soft. Dillard doesn't punch anybody. Dillard catches the pass rusher. And then the pass rusher, with all that momentum, just pushes the left tackle, Dillard, all the way back to the quarterback, right around the edge, right? He needs to set out a little bit farther. And then when it's time to make contact, he needs to punch that guy to disrupt his balance and disrupt his move. And he never ever does it. And so if I'm the Titans, I'm not starting Petit-Ferrer at left tackle. But depending on what they've seen from him in practice, I would package for him to go in at some point during the game and give him a series here and there and see how he holds up. You know, give him some plays that are not going to be seven-step drops for Tannehill, you know, have some bubble screens, some runs, you know, things like that. Let him get his feet wet and see how he does. Because I think that we've seen the best of Andre Dillard, because this entire season, he has not improved a single thing in his pass protection technique. He's still doing the things that makes defensive edge rushers salivate. And so I would be trying to make a replacement at that position, but I wouldn't just up and do it. I want to see that Petit-Ferrer could be, you know, would do better, because it's possible to do worse than Diller's doing. At least he's in contact with that edge rusher when he comes around the corner and hits the quarterback. You know, and I would hate to see Petit-Ferrer get in there and just whiff and then have the guy running free.
Trevor, every time the Titans threw outside the numbers on Sunday, they used extra protection for Tannehill, whether it was a tight end or they left the back end to chip, you know, to really protect the tackles on Sunday. Is that sustainable, or is that something you can do once and then the league's going to figure you out and now you got to adjust to it?
No, it's sustainable to a degree. I mean, your wide receivers have to win. That's what has to happen. And your running game has to be a threat, because most of those max protections were off of play action. So now you keep two tight ends and a running back in. Now you've got eight guys blocking. Quarterback, that makes nine. Now you got two receivers out, right? Or maybe you have, you know, eight to block and three receivers out. Or excuse me, seven to block and eight receivers out. So, you know, the league will catch up if your receivers don't win and if your running game is not a threat. But if your running game is a threat, then it's a different question. Because now the safeties still have to respect that. You probably have to come up and load the box, right? And that means that with those two or three guys go out into the pattern, they still will be able to get open. Now, the max protection, sometimes it was max and everybody stayed in to block. And man, did that make me happy. That made me so happy. Because earlier in the season, you know, the Titans were talking about how, you know, they don't want to take guys out of the pass pattern by making them block. Well, you can put 20 guys out in the pass pattern. If the quarterback's getting hit before he can throw the ball, it doesn't matter. And so sometimes they stayed in, but other times they chipped. And the chipping in this game was magnificent. I mean magnificent. There was one play where Derrick Henry chipped Trey Hendrickson, who was rushing over left tackle, and he hit him so hard that Hendrickson kind of spun around and now was pointing the opposite direction. He was facing his own defensive teammates down the field. I thought he would either run down there, you know, and try to get involved in the tackle from the pass play, or turn back around and try to not lose contain against Tannehill, because he had contain on the left side. But Hendrick shocked him so, or excuse me, Henry shocked him so much with that chip that he spun him around. He was facing the wrong direction, and he stayed facing the wrong direction for the rest of the play. And to me, that kind of a chip makes a statement, and it really helps for a variety of reasons. The tight ends chipped very well also, but that one from Henry really stood out. And the thing is, if they become a chipping, you know, monster, they can still get guys out into outlet pass areas late and still be a check down after you chip. So there's all kinds of good things that can happen. What you don't want to do is go to chip and don't do it very well. The tackle expects you to chip, and so he sets a little bit inside waiting for the chip, and you don't do it. You know, so, but they did it really well this last week.
Trevor Maddich is presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics and by Twin Peaks. Does the SEC stink? We'll get Trevor's thoughts on it next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
They're going to get them with leaping of the shield is what they're going to get them with. So that is a costly penalty that puts Kentucky back on the field. And then Ray Davis, all day Ray. Look at him go. Man, oh man, is Davis doing it up. 75-yard touchdown for sweet baby Ray.
Man, Joe Tessitore getting just, I mean, how many nicknames was that for Ray Davis right there? It's like listening to Chris Berman call the game. Trevor Maddich is with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters, and by Twin Peaks, home of the wall-to-wall sports and 29-degree drafts. Trevor, Kentucky, we'll see this week against Georgia. But outside of that, I think the SEC stinks. I think Georgia stinks by their standards. I think Alabama stinks by Alabama standards. I think Florida stinks, period. I think Vandy stinks. I think Tennessee, you know, if you lose to Florida because Florida stinks, what's that say about you? I mean, Trevor, I think this league, Arkansas, LSU can't play any defense. I think this league stinks. Am I right?
No. It doesn't stink. It's not as dominant at the top as it has been in recent years. And there's more teams that are, I think, beatable by some of the better teams in other conferences this year, as we saw with Texas coming in and beating Alabama. But I don't think they stink. I think Texas A&M is kind of on the rise. I think Kentucky is better than people think.
Texas A&M got beat
Alabama's
by Miami.
I think Alabama's on the rise. What's that? Yeah,
Texas
but Miami.
Texas easily
find out Miami's
got
a really
beat
good
by
team.
Miami.
But we're going to find out Miami's a really good team. We're going to find out more about A&M and Alabama this week when they play at Texas A&M, because that's going to be almost an elimination game for the SEC West. And so we're going to, I think both of those teams are on the rise. We'll find out which one's most on the rise. Alabama, defense is playing really well. Offensive line is getting better, but still has a long ways to go. And they're starting to figure out how to use Jalen Milroe at quarterback. He's not going to be a good intermediate passer, which he kind of needs to grow into at some point. This year, he's not going to get good at that. What he has to do is continue to not make mistakes when he throws the ball there. So he's getting better that way. I think the biggest thing that makes people think that the SEC isn't all that good is that there's only one team in the top 10 from the SEC right now. There's three Big Ten teams, three Pac-12 teams, three or two Big 12 teams, and only one SEC team in the top 10 right now, and that's Georgia. And Georgia is not looking like they're the best team in the country. You know, they're looking like they probably should be ranked around 5 or 6 or so at the highest. And so, you know, I think that's part of the reason that the SEC is looking like it's not very good, because the best team in the SEC is looking like it doesn't deserve to be where they are.
Trevor, Kentucky goes to Athens this weekend. I mean, are you a believer in Kentucky? What do you think of them? Because I watched them play in person against Vanderbilt last week, and they were great, and then they were great against Florida this week. What do you think of UK?
Yeah, I'm a believer in Kentucky, except for one enormous caveat. Kentucky's defense is playing really well, right? And they're going to be really tested against Georgia. I'm guessing that Georgia is going to take a step forward. They've had some issues. But I think their defense is pretty salty. The offensive line can compete with the best in the SEC. Ray Davis was just unbelievable.
Sweet baby
against
Ray.
Florida. Oh, man. So they can stop the run. They can run the ball. And they can stop the pass. And what they can't do yet is throw the ball. their passing attack has been abysmal. Even this game against Florida, when Ray Davis ran for 280 yards as a team, they were well over 300 yards. Quarterback Devin Leary still was under 50% completion. He was 9 for 20. With that kind of a running game and the defense trying to focus on stopping the run, he should have been off the charts in terms of his passing performance, but he wasn't. And that's one thing that worries me, to be one-dimensional to go down and play Georgia.
Trevor, who is the best team in the country?
Man, is that a good question. If you ask me right now, it's Texas. You know, you put aside the fact that Texas has the best win at Alabama, although Ohio State's win at Notre Dame is a very good one as well. Texas, on the offensive and defensive line combination, can compete with anybody, and that includes Michigan. Right now, Michigan's combination O-line and D-line is just fantastic in terms of the top 10 teams. Texas has an incredibly explosive offense, both in the passing game and the running back room. Their defense has a lot of talent and a lot of playmaking ability on the back end to go with that massive defensive front that's very active behind the line of scrimmage. So you put all those things together and you say, okay, well, who's better? You look at Michigan. Well, Michigan, I think Texas has the edge on Michigan with pass catchers. I mean, Michigan, Roman Wilson is a wide receiver, has really risen up to become a great deep threat. But he's the only guy that has a chance to really scare you. There's a bunch of guys on Texas's team that'll really scare you. And the thing is, their tight end, Jatavion Sanders, actually leads the team of everybody with double-digit catches at average per catch. He's averaging 21 yards per catch. That's more than any wide receiver that's got double-digit catches. And that's the tight end. Michigan can't match that right now. So if you had to ask me now, I would say Texas.
So I would go with Oregon, but Texas is not a bad call. What I would say is this. I do not believe in the transitive property of sports, Trevor, which is, well, we beat them and they beat them, so we should beat them because of that. I don't believe in that normally. But I watch Oregon dominate Colorado. Then the next week, I watch, and USC was in command of the game. But it was a much, much closer game for USC this week against Colorado than Oregon versus Colorado was. Should that make me think more about Oregon and less about USC?
Now, that should make – well, Oregon's a good call as well. And there are people that agree with you that Oregon is the best team in the country right now. But that game, USC-Colorado, I don't think that should make you think anything about Oregon. The only thing that should make you think about is this. Colorado is a resilient team. They're not just flash and they're not just playing for clicks. You know, Oregon's coach Dan Lanning's pregame speech last week or 2 weeks ago, notwithstanding. And they fought back. Number two, their quarterback, Shedeur Sanders, is my leader for Heisman right now. Not because of stats, but because he's doing much more with much less than anybody else in the country. They can't run the ball. The offensive line can't protect him. And his top receiver, Travis Hunter, is out for probably another two games or so. The next best receiver, Xavier Weaver, has been catching a lot of passes, but he can't do anything with him because he's dinged up. So it's a very short average per catch. And yet he still was able to bring this team back. So the first thing it should be is that Colorado deserves more respect than they're getting. The second thing is USC has got a lot to prove, or else we're going to label them soft. Mm-hmm. Because they were running away with the game, and then they let Colorado come right back in it. And it's not like they just scored a bunch in garbage time. That game went right down to the wire. And by the way, Arizona State put 28 points on their defense the week before. And they never should have. Arizona State's abysmal on offense for a variety of reasons. So I would say it doesn't reflect on Oregon. It does reflect on Colorado. And it reflects on USC. You know, Oregon just got up on Colorado, and then they never let up. And they did what a good team is supposed to do.
Trevor, do you think that this is it for Nick Saban after this season?
I think he will coach there at the highest level as long as he wants. The question is, what does he want? And at this point, what else can he accomplish? Because he's already got all those national championships. Is he just going to try to get another one? Is he going to try to extend it? Is he going to, is he going to try to find another Heisman Trophy winner? He's already got those. What's he going to do now that he hasn't already done? And it's interesting to me that he goes on Pat McAfee's show as a regular contributor, like he's on once a week or something. Mm-hmm. And Pat McAfee's on game day. So I don't know anything. I have no idea. I don't talk to anybody about this stuff. But I just have to wonder that with all of Saban's appearances on game day in the past during his bye week, I wonder if he kind of is building chemistry and he's kind of getting ready for the next stage, which is to stay in football, but to do it in broadcasting, because there's nothing more that he can do as a football coach except coach because he enjoys it. So if he does leave, he'll be because he chooses to go to a different challenge. But I do not buy into the concept that the dynasty is over, that Saban has been passed by. I don't buy into that.
Trevor Maddich, great stuff. As always, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics and Twin Peaks. Trevor, you're the best. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Jared.
Yep, Trevor Maddich, he is the best here on the program. Chad Withrow going to join us coming up next. I do want his thoughts on the Titans after they had that big win over the Bengals. And, you know, is there some Kool-Aid to be consumed? We'll do that next. Live from the grand opening of the DraftKings Sports and Social out here on 2nd Avenue at Nashville Live. You know I love Twice Daily. I actually went to Twice Daily today on my way here, and I saw the kiosk, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to the Twice Daily kiosk, and I saw I could get a chicken burrito at the Twice Daily kiosk made fresh to order right there. Boom. It was fabulous. You know, that's why I love Twice Daily. And that's why you need to download the Twice Daily app and join the loyalty program to unlock special discounts, savings, and so much more. Including, if the Titans score any points in the last 2 minutes of either half on Sunday, you will get a free half sub the next day for all loyalty members through the app. So again, on Sunday, if they score at the end of the half like they did last week with the Derrick Henry touchdown pass, you get a free half sub if you're a loyalty member on the app. You know I love Twice Daily. Again, it pays to be a member at Twice Daily. If you're looking for convenience, Twice Daily has you covered. Twice Daily, fresh all day.